You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 4th of March, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say that we are live today, and that means we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I think I have another test to tell if someone's an idiot. If anyone refers to a policy that Joe Biden came up with, or that Joe Biden made a decision, you know the guy's a fool and you can't trust anything they say. If Joe Biden did something, you know the guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That may work. I may test that later.
Well, it has to be a committee, doesn't it? You know, puppets don't have any thoughts of their own. I'm convinced that he's actually senile. Did you know he has a little loudspeaker in his ear that tells him what to say and how to respond to things? I still have yet to see him actually give an interview and actually be asked questions, good hard questions on what he thinks about anything. We just don't know what he thinks about anything. We do know that he wants to start a war with either China or Syria or Russia, and it looks like he first on that list is Syria. He went there bombing Syria just last week. The Syrian government has denounced a US airstrike on its border with Iraq as an act of aggression contrary to international law, as President Joe Biden told reporters he ordered the strike as a warning to Iran. Washington said the US airstrike targeted Iranian-backed militant groups including Kayatib Hezbollah and Kayatib Sayed al-Shuhad near the town of al-Bukamal on the Syrian-Iraqi border, and was retaliation for recent rocket attacks on facilities in Iraq used by US troops and contractors stationed there. Iran has denied any responsibility for the attacks. An obscure Shiite militia group, calling itself Saraya Olia al-Dam, claimed responsibility for targeting Erbil International Airport earlier this month. So what do we have here? They want to punish Iran. How do they go about punishing Iran? Well, we'll just bomb Syria instead. And then they talk about the fact that it's these groups, this Hezbollah and Shahad group that they're going after. But it was Saraya Alia al-Dam that actually claimed responsibility for doing this. Matt, what is going on here? Surely you must know.
Well, Johnson's law, as always, remains as ironclad as ever. It's not an accident that these are very obscure groups. If they exist at all, they've been around, you know, according to their according to the official documents anyway, for about 25 years. I guess the ultimate foundation here, as Paul Wolfowitz said in the 1990s, that the objective is to prevent the reemergence of any rival to American liberalism. Now, he was referring to Russia in that case. But when you have a first world economy and a first world military like Iran, who was helping Syria make that jump from third to first world, along with Russia and China. There's a lot of investment there, what's left of it. That's really the issue. Bombing them back into the Stone Age is not just a slogan. They really mean that. So using these obscure groups that, you know, rockets, you know, a few weeks ago fell on an American base. I think it killed a Filipino contractor. I've read the CBS reports on it that sound worse than anything I've ever read in Pravda in the 1970s and 80s. Sheer official propaganda, trying to take, you know, the personal angle, all the terrible injuries and how the U.S. has to respond. I'll talk about the media in a minute. But just the public ignorance, especially the media ignorance. I mean, the media hasn't gone to anyone but Americans, American servicemen, American politicians, for any opinion. And the only person that really matters has come out against this has been Bernie Sanders, who's actually done a pretty good job in condemning this attack, because, you know, Congress had nothing to do with it. But the media, as always, is defending Biden, who, of course, had nothing to do with the decision to do any of this. He couldn't point out these countries on a map. He could 20 years ago, but he can't now.
Well, of course, Trump did the same, didn't he? Trump bombed Syria, I think, fairly soon after he was inaugurated as president. It's not just America that's been bombing Syria as well. Israel has been bombing Syria, and this appears to have annoyed Russia somewhat. How Russia responds to Israel's attacks on Iranian targets inside Syria could make all the difference as to whether the region boils over into full-scale war or continues to simmer at its current, already dangerous level. In an official statement last week, the special envoy of the President of Russia to Syria, Alexander Lavrentiev, indicated that Moscow was rapidly losing patience with Israel over airstrikes against alleged Iranian targets on Syrian soil. Sooner or later, the cup of patience, including the Syrian government, may be overflowing, and a retaliatory strike will follow, which will accordingly lead to a new round of tension. These attacks must be stopped. They are counterproductive. We hope that the Israeli side will hear our concerns, including concerns about the possible escalation of violence in Syria. Now, Israel have been bombing Syria for years, and there's never been any response from the Syrians to Israel about this. And I am thinking that, this Russian response sounds a little bit hollow to me. I bet we see, in a few weeks' time, we see Israel bombing Syria once again, and we still won't see any response from Syria or Russia. I think this is saber-rattling. Matt, maybe you have a different interpretation. What do you make of it?
Well, this is, despite the language being very, diplomatic, this is a serious thing. I've not heard this kind of language before aimed at Israel, saying that, talking about escalation, talking about retaliation. There's an implicit threat here that if these continue, especially since it's always done for the benefit of ISIS, which of course is an American proxy, Israeli planes might be shot down. I've never come across language like this. I mean, using the language that it's not even well-veiled, that Israel needs to stop this. Now, in the Syrian case, their military is so heavily dependent on the Russians, to a less extent the Chinese, that they have no choice but to listen. And it's probably a good thing. Putin knows how the West operates militarily and knows how to check them at every turn. They're not going to win either way, with as far as the Russians are concerned. But this kind of language, this is new to me. I'm not really sure where it's going to lead, but the Israelis in this case aren't stupid.
Well, we did hear complaints, didn't we, when the Israelis hid behind a Russian plane so that the air defense batteries couldn't fire at the Israeli plane. It hid behind a Russian plane, so it deliberately put the Russians in the line of fire. Now, I can't recall whether the plane was actually taken out due to that, but there was some saber rattling after that, and now we see Israel bombing Syria, and we hear these tough words from Russia. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. But let's have a look at how we actually got to this situation. From the moment Russia dispatched its armed forces to Syria in September 2015 to prevent the collapse of the Syrian government of President Bashar al-Assad at the hands of US-backed Islamic terrorists, it has found itself at the nexus of competing geopolitical games. One of the main issues confronting Russia was avoiding conflict in its airspace between its air force and the anti-Islamic State coalition, headed up by the United States. This task was complicated by the fact that the US was really using the campaign to counter Islamic State as a cover for training and equipping Islamist forces dedicated to the removal of President Assad. The US also sought to leverage its influence with Syrian Kurds to create an autonomous region in northeast Syria that operated outside the control of Damascus. So what we have there is we have Russia were actually invited into Syria. We also have Iran. They were invited into Syria. And then you have the Americans, who were not invited, who are bombing parts of Syria. And we have Israel, who are also not invited and are bombing parts of Syria. And both of those are against international law, and yet we've been told that it's Syria and Iran that are the bad guys. I saw a really good speech last week, or a clip of a speech of President al-Assad, just totally demolishing liberalism, talking about trannies and transsexual children and all this sort of nonsense, and just pointing out how ridiculous it is. And of course, that's the reason why they are attacking him, is because he is a nationalist president. And what do you make of Russia being in there, and what's being talked about here, Matt?
Well, the author is normally pretty good on this stuff, but to claim that the U.S. in any way is at war with the Islamic State is ridiculous. To this day, they haven't attacked a single Israeli or American target, nor will they. Nothing about that media story adds up. But I've been saying this about Assad, not just Bashar, but his father. Back in 1991, I wrote a paper in college that Hafez al-Assad was really a national socialist, and I went on about that, and I got attacked because he had been a Soviet client up until that point. So these two men of course, his father was a general in the Air Force, are pretty significant figures as far as social nationalism globally are concerned. But ultimately, it comes down to the U.S. and the Israeli desire to petition not just Syria, but any Arab power that has the ability to build a first world economy. And now, especially that Joe Biden, well, the administration, people speaking for him, has stopped a lot of domestic oil production. The U.S. now has an excuse to continue to go into the Middle East, really for Israeli purposes, but they could always talk about the need for free-flowing oil resources. So that's one thing that they've been taking and stealing from day one, is the oil coming through Syria. But I keep repeating myself, Syria was on the verge of first world status precisely at the time when this so-called civil war began. And that's not an accident. That was the case in Iraq. That was the case in Syria. It was the case in Libya. And again, these are extremely, and now these economies are fourth world. But if peace were to come, you would have Russian and Chinese investment quickly to rebuild it. But I don't think Turkey or the U.S. or the Israelis are going to let that happen.
Well, you brought up Turkey there, and you were just discussing the problems that Russia was facing with America there. And Russia has also faced problems with Turkey. Do you want to talk about that for a bit?
Well, we did a show on the war between Azerbaijan and Armenia. Azerbaijan has become a client, both of the Turks and the Israelis. Turkey and Israel now are very close allies, and they've essentially colonized that country. And the purpose of colonizing Azerbaijan is to have a northern base to attack Iran one day, which is Israel's entire purpose. So what they've done to Syria is the same thing what they did to Armenia just last year, reducing it to, you know, this prostrate status, so as not to be, despite them being small countries, they're still cohesive, they still have militaries worth talking about, and they're still allies of Russia. Russia is the target here. Challenging American liberalism is what, you know, the Russian and the Syrian and the Chinese purpose is, ideologically speaking. And their economies, up until recently, were doing far better than anything in the West, with no debt or anything else. This was the real threat. It has nothing to do with military or nuclear power or anything else. The threat is to build a credible ideological and economic alternative to Western liberalism.
Syria had a massive sovereign wealth fund before all these troubles started over there. I mean, it was billions in credit. It had no need to borrow any money whatsoever. I'm sure a lot of that must have been lost during this war. Now, let's have a look at what Iran is doing there. Iran is likewise deeply ensconced in Syria. Like Russia, Iran's involvement came at the explicit invitation of the Syrian government. Iran's Syrian engagement predates that of Russia. Indeed, it was Iran which helped convince the Russians of the necessity for intervention. As such, Russia and Iran have had common purpose when it comes to stabilizing the security situation inside Syria. However, Iran's involvement goes beyond simply helping her neighbor, and instead is part and parcel of a larger regional strategy built around the concept of an axis of resistance, which would further Iran's regional security and ambition. As such, Iran has used the Syrian conflict as a cover for facilitating military support for Hezbollah in Lebanon, both in terms of allegedly supplying that organization with precision-guided munitions capable of reaching Israel, but also establishing a de facto second front by helping Hezbollah establish itself in the Golan region of southern Syria. And what they leave out there is quite what the axis of resistance is resisting against. I mean, they would like you to believe that it's just resisting against Israel, but I suspect you're going to tell us it's also resisting against liberalism, Matt.
Yeah, when I use the word liberalism, I'm talking about, you know, free trade, individualism, essentially oligarchy, what the regime calls democracy, quote unquote. That's the resistance here. It's ideological, it's financial, it's economic. And I've been saying since the 1990s that Russia is in a particularly good position, despite its disastrous situation at the time, to lead this resistance, which is exactly what's happened over the last 20 years. And people forget that, you know, Israel has the military technology to hit whatever it wants, despite it being very vulnerable. The U.S. is in no position to go to war against anybody, let alone to support a little tiny country like Israel in the Middle East, especially since Turkey has been such a wild card recently. In 2000, when the South Lebanon Army was defeated by Hezbollah, that was a massive defeat for both American and Israeli forces. And then later, when Russia intervened in Syria and destroyed the American proxies, ISIS there, the U.S. then immediately sided with al-Qaeda, among other groups, to try to overthrow Assad. So the regime is vulnerable. It can be defeated. It's been defeated twice. That's the two things I just mentioned. So the axis of resistance is essentially the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It has very minor players like Hezbollah and stuff like that, but Iran is not a minor player, and neither would Syria be if her economy was in one piece. So Iran is absolutely essential here, and because of her economic success and continued growth and Chinese investment and everything else, you're going to have a lot of countries in the Middle East very interested in not harming Iran, but investing there and being a part of economic projects there. So they'll condemn Iran on one side of their mouth, but they want to profit from it on the other.
I should imagine Iran is very self-sufficient, the same as Russia, after all these sanctions as well. Let's have a look at Syria's response now. Syrian air defenses have shot down most of the missiles in a strike targeting the area outside Damascus from the territory of the occupied Golan Heights, the country's state media reported, blaming Israel for the attack. The missiles were launched towards the Syrian capital at around 10:16 p.m. local time, Syria's Sana news agency reported, citing a military source. Few of the projectiles are believed to have reached the ground. The source said that the country's missile defenses took down most of the enemy missiles. The fresh bombing raid comes on the heels of US airstrikes that reportedly demolished several facilities on the Syrian-Iraqi border that the Pentagon claimed were being used by Iranian-backed militias. The airstrikes, spun by the US military as defensive, became the first of their kind under the Joe Biden regime, which said the attack was in retaliation to rocket attacks on US and coalition troops in Iraq. The Pentagon argued that the bombing was aimed at de-escalation of tensions in Syria and Iraq, but drew stark condemnation from both Damascus and Tehran, arguing that the raid only inflamed the volatile situation. Iran argued that the US airstrikes would prove useful to terrorists, accusing Washington of seeking to revive the Islamic State terrorist group. Syria denounced the strikes as cowardly aggression, noting that the new US administration had shown its disregard for efforts to resolve the Syrian conflict, as the bombing coincided with the visit of the UN Special Envoy for Syria to the country. So he's basically saying, we don't want peace. We don't want the UN Special Envoy to actually come to any peace in Syria. We want to bomb the place. And then you get Israel coming along and firing missiles at Damascus. At least the United States bombed the border. They bombed a military target. I mean, the Israelis were literally firing missiles at the capital city of Syria. And it's only RT that's actually reporting on this. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I think the Israeli strategy, and I've been talking about this for a long time, is if they were actually caught doing anything, if there was really retaliation, the Israelis would immediately blame the U.S. and put them in the firing line. you mentioned the airplane that was behind the Russian one, which is such an emblematic way for these how the Israeli state functions, to pin the blame on someone else. But the fact that the Syrian air defenses, which largely come from Russia, shot down most of these missiles, despite the country being in such a mess now, even though it grew actually a couple percentage points last year, show that they're still very capable of defending themselves. And thank God for state media, because they're the only ones telling any kind of truth over there. The American press, as we know, is embedded within military units, and their articles, as a matter of law now, have to be censored by the local commander. Then they go to the Pentagon, they're censored again, and only then do they go to the editor of whatever newspaper they're writing for. So you can't believe anything coming out of the American press in that respect, even less than normal. But these militias that, of course, you know, the American public knows nothing about, journalists know nothing about, they were involved in fighting the remnants of ISIS. The Russians and the Syrian army defeated ISIS and at least put them on the defensive. But these groups, so when you attack these groups, it's essentially the ISIS Air Force. As Assad said a couple of years ago, ISIS does have an air force. It's called the Israeli Air Force or the American Air Force. So this is essentially running interference for them. And the Syrian Arab Army is being reinforced by these militias, which are autonomous, but they do get weaponry from actually Hezbollah in Lebanon. And Russian policy has been able to keep those channels of you know, the movement of material open and to keep the U.S. from interfering with it. So it's been a huge success in that respect. But the whole point of this, of course, is to keep the Islamic State alive, because it is a pure American and to a lesser extent Turkish proxy.
Well, Israel also bombed Syria 2 weeks before the Americans did. The Israeli Defense Forces routinely strike Syrian territory on the pretext of wiping out Iranian targets, there to prevent Tehran from gaining a foothold in the region. Israel rarely acknowledges its incursions into Syria, however, in line with its long-standing policy of not commenting on bombing raids abroad. The barrage of missiles hit the outskirts of the Syrian capital shortly after Ali Asghar Khaji, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif's senior aide for special political affairs, blasted Israel for its aggressive and hostile policies in Syria. In an interview with Sputnik published on Sunday, he said that while Iranian forces operate in Syria at the request of the government to fight terrorists, Israel supports them. He also warned Tel Aviv not to cross any red lines in Syria and that Israel should brace itself for the toughest response, if it does. What do you think those red lines are, Matt? Because, I mean, they just keep bombing the country. I mean, what can you do that's worse than just bombing the country in the way that they are? What are these red lines that the Iranians are pointing to here?
Well, these attacks are pretty limited. If you remember that the Israelis always used to complain of Hezbollah missiles being sent into the Golan Heights. They made a big deal, a big international deal about it. But of course, they do this every day around the world. The point, hopefully, for the Israeli point of view, is that in a retaliation, a couple of Americans will be killed, and the U.S. will be forced to have a much larger scale war against the Syrian government. And of course, the Israelis don't give a damn about what happens to the U.S. so long as the U.S. is doing they're fighting for them. You asked me about Turkey before, and you do have this almost, you know, empire building idea coming from the Turkish state and their support of very early support of the American ISIS phenomenon. They even tried to absorb Aleppo into their new empire. They were on the ground from the very beginning, organizing these anti-Assad, anti-Russian forces. At the same time, Turkey is buying anti-aircraft weapons from both the Chinese and the Russians. So they're playing both sides. Erdogan, you know, is amoral, but he knows how to play both sides against the middle. This has become a world war, partially thanks to Turkey. But these red lines I've mentioned, and the Russians have been very clear what these red lines are. If they're going to escalate, then there's going to be a response. But for these guys in the Biden administration hiding behind this poor, demented man, to talk about, you know, missile attacks and bombings being de-escalation. I mean, we use the word Orwellian so much that it really has lost all meaning by now. But this is absolutely shameless. So a missile attack is de-escalation. You know, only the American media would say something so stupid.
It's like punching someone in the face and saying you're just de-escalating tensions by doing so. Well, let's have a look at the American response to this. Joe Biden's Syrian airstrikes were hailed by CNN as a masterstroke of diplomacy, delivered with a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer. Strangely enough, it sang the same song when Donald Trump launched his own strikes. Delivered on Thursday by two F-15 fighter jets, Biden's airstrikes knocked out several facilities the Pentagon says were used by Iranian-backed militias in Syria. The Pentagon described the strikes as defensive in nature and as a response to rocket attacks on US and coalition troops in Iraq. A militia spokesman said one fighter was killed and several wounded. CNN was ecstatic. In an article published on Friday evening, analyst Nick Patton Walsh described the attack as minimally lethal and a small signal that the Biden administration is not gun-shy. Unlike President Donald Trump's sledgehammer diplomacy, the scalpel-like strike was a reasonable move in Biden's efforts to bring Iran back into the 2015 nuclear deal, which Trump pulled out of in 2018. In the protracted effort to see who will blink first between Tehran and the Biden administration, Thursday's strikes on Iranian-backed militias in Syria are but a tiny insect floating into both their gazes, read a particularly florid paragraph in an article that went on to praise Biden's cabinet of Iran experts and criticize the damage the last 4 years of Trump has done to faith in careful American diplomacy. That CNN supports Joe Biden, at least compared to Trump, is no surprise. But the liberal network seemingly has a soft spot for airstrikes as a diplomatic tool. When Trump launched his own strikes on the same militia in Syria in 2019, he received some rare praise from CNN. Trump's strikes were a sensible use of force, analyst Peter Bergen wrote at the time, in an unusual departure from the network's usual anti-Trump hyperbole. I mean, this seems to be the new phrase, doesn't it? Iranian-backed militias. They use that as the excuse for attacking Iraq, for attacking Iran, for attacking Syria. You know, I'm amazed if we don't see them use that as an excuse for attacking Lebanon or any of the other countries that surround Israel. This is a new phrase, isn't it? Iranian-backed militias. What do you make of what they're saying here, the American response, Matt?
Yeah, using phrases or words like backed by somebody or they have ties with Iran, those are deliberate. They're deliberately vague. It could mean anything. There's really no one at CNN that has any particular expertise there. What they're doing is simply reprinting Pentagon PR papers as news. They don't really give much information, but they use these florid terms to describe how brilliant these attacks are. And making one thing very clear here, the left, from the English Revolution and French Revolution on, has been the most pro-war faction of politics far more than anybody else. They've always been pro-war. But in the U.S., there's still this prejudice. Because they were against the Vietnam War, therefore they're the party of peace. They were against the Vietnam War because communists were the target, and for no other reason. They've always been pro-war. They're pro-military. All of these wars, all of these in New York Times has supported every war over the last 30 years. And they're supporting this one because overwhelmingly the targets are essentially national socialist or nationalist or even religious-based states. There they have no problem. So you're going to see a complete reversal. You've seen it for a long time now. But there's still this prejudice that somehow the left is pacifistic and anti-militarist when the exact opposite is true. It just depends on the target.
It's certainly not just about supporting Biden, is it? The American media just loves sending bombs and missiles in the name of democracy. Let's have a look at an article here from 2018. Major US newspapers love war. When Trump ordered a Tomahawk missile strike on a Syrian airfield last year, FAIR found that out of 47 editorials, only one opposed the action. The editorial board of the Denver Post was especially giddy at the prospect of conflict, writing, "The US decision to launch cruise missiles at Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's airfield felt good." So too were the editors at the New York Times, who wrote, it was hard not to feel some sense of emotional satisfaction. For the last three decades, the New York Times has not opposed a single US war. From the Gulf to Bosnia to Iraq and Afghanistan, the nation's paper of record has thrown its weight behind every foreign military adventure. Media coverage of Donald Trump's presidency has been overwhelmingly negative. A Harvard study found that during the president's first 100 days in office, 87% of articles in the New York Times and 83% of articles in the Washington Post about Trump were negative. The only time the Trump bashing lets up, however, is when the president decides to launch missiles at a foreign country, a trend that is worryingly indicative of the American media's priorities. So they're saying there, it's been going on for 30 years, Matt, this cheerleading for war in America. What are your final thoughts on all of this?
Can you imagine being so ignorant and being used as a propaganda conduit that when you're writing about serious and complicated foreign policy attacks that kill a lot of civilians, that you use phrase like feeling good or emotional satisfaction? You imagine, you know, there's not a lot of money in the world that would get me to write something like that. The ignorance, the you know, I've been reading Pravda and communist publications for decades, and they're nowhere near this absurd and this ridiculous in how they discuss things. They're nothing but propaganda conduits for the Pentagon, and you know, this new black defense secretary worked for Raytheon. It's a revolving door between corporate America and the military, and the left is behind it all right now. So they're not communists, therefore destroying them is a good thing. That's how they operate.
It's absolutely twisted, isn't it? Cheering on the killing of people when it's not in defense of your country, it's happening right over the other side of the world. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.